Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Today's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm your host today, Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Thursday already, December 14th, 2023. Hey, happy post-Fed meeting day. It's been a good 26 hours for gold and silver, as our market report is about to explain. Both gold and silver off their highs of the day. Gold got up to as high as 2047, up $8.70, just shy of $2,037 in the New York spot market. Silver up 39 cents, percent and two-thirds almost, at $24.27. Platinum up 22 bucks at $9.70. And palladium up $117 at $1,134. Now, that's all on the back of a declining U.S. dollar index, down about 1% today, at 101.97, continuing good news for gold and silver. Other commodities, we have natural gas up 3.5% to $2.42. Domestic oil, West Texas Intermediate, up 3.2% at $71.70 a barrel. Treasury market mostly yields mostly down today. Bellwether 10-year yield down 0.118 at 3.91%. The two-year still showing inversion, although that's narrowing, continues to narrow. That's down slightly too, 4.38%. And with equities, I got the Dow Jones continuing to another record, 37,248. That's up about 158 points today. NASDAQ up 27 and change at 14,762, it rounds to. And the S&P 500 up 12 points and change at 4,700, we'll call it 20. Most other markets around the world, except looks Japan and China, were up as well. Nikkei down about 0.75%. Shanghai also down about 0.33%. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Well, as I mentioned, gold continues to rise. Prices touched that one-week high this morning in New York as the dollar and treasury yields were beaten lower after the Fed signaled an end to its monetary policy tightening cycle. Spot gold rose 1% as of mid-morning, $2,047, after surging 2.4% yesterday. U.S. February gold futures jumped 3.2% to over 2,061. TD Securities, the Fed's dovish pivot gave a green light to markets to price in a more aggressive Fed cutting cycle on the horizon, and we expect that markets will run with it. Now, they added that this is extremely positive for especially gold prices, given that investor demand was one of the missing pieces for the rally to new all-time highs to be sustained. As we know, lower interest rates decrease the opportunity cost of holding non-yielding physical gold and weigh on the dollar, making gold cheaper for investors holding other currencies. Can the dollar slip to a four-month low while 10-year yield dropped to its lowest level since late July? 17 of 19 Fed officials yesterday projected lower interest rates by the end of 2024 after the Fed kept interest rates steady for their third meeting in a row, as was almost unanimously expected. In fact, markets are now pricing in around an 83% chance of a Fed rate cut beginning in March. That's according to the CME Fed Watch tool. European Central Bank also left interest rates unchanged as expected today, signaling an early end to its last remaining bond purchase scheme. UBS analyst Giovanni Stanovo said, "We retain a positive outlook for gold, targeting a price of $2,250 an ounce by the end of 2024. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said it would make sense for the Fed to consider lowering interest rates as inflation eases to keep the economy on an even keel. She said as inflation moves down, in a way it's natural that interest rates would come down somewhat because real interest rates would otherwise increase, which would tend to tighten financial conditions. The impact of interest rates on the economy, of course, depends on their level in relation to the inflation rate. As inflation decreases, policy rates become more restrictive if they remain steady." Well, Yellen added that my expectation is that inflation will continue to come down, adding she anticipated that it will fall into range near 2% by the end of next year. Well, good luck with that. That is still more optimistic than what most economists see happening. In any event, Yellen spoke a day after government data showed consumer prices moved up ever so slightly in November compared with the prior month. The CPI rose 3.1% last month from a year earlier, while core inflation, which excludes those volatile food and energy costs and which the Fed tends to look at more closely, advanced 4% for a second straight month. Economists, again, favor this core metric as a better gauge of the overall trend in inflation. Ellen noted that the Fed has to think about what path of financial conditions they regard as consistent with keeping the economy on a soft landing path. But they have two risks to manage, she adds. One, that inflation doesn't come back down to their target as they envision it. And the other is the economy becomes too weak. She said, I'm going to leave that to them. I'm not sure if that's a good or not so good thing, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, things are a little different across the big pond. The Bank of England is signaling it may not be finished raising interest rates there, as Governor Andrew Bailey said there's still some way to go in the UK's inflation fight. Now, policymakers at the BOE warned today that inflation was proving more stubborn than in other rich countries, as they said, further tightening would be needed if price pressures persist. Even if interest rates don't need to rise again, the bank indicated that they will likely need to be restrictive for an extended period of time to help return inflation to their 2% target as well. Now, the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, known as MPC for short, voted to keep borrowing costs on hold at 5.25%, as 3 out of the 9 policymakers continued to vote to raise rates to 5.5%. That decision opens a divide between two of the world's top central banks after the Fed suggested rates could be cut at least 3 times next year. Commenting on the BOE decision, Mr. Bailey said, we've come a long way this year, and successive rate increases have helped bring inflation down from over 10% in January to 4.6% in October, but there's still some way to go. He added that we'll continue to watch the data closely and take the decisions necessary to get inflation all the way back to 2%. Now, policymakers in the BOE noted that bond yields in many advanced economies had fallen materially over the past couple of weeks, which had prompted a number of lenders to slash mortgage deals and hint at more cuts to come. Minutes of the MPC's meeting also predicted growth would flatline for the rest of this year, with the UK narrowly avoiding a recession. However, they did push back against any assumption of an imminent fall in the bank's base rate, warning that pay and services inflation in particular, two key indicators of price pressures in the UK, remain elevated. So, boy, central banks continuing to make news all around the world. Well, back here in the States, consumers showed unexpected strength last month, give it a solid start to the holiday season as inflation again showed signs of continued easing. Long term, anyway. Retail sales rose 0.3% in November, stronger than the 0.2% decline in October and better than the estimate for a decrease of 0.1%, according to the Commerce Department report today. Now, excluding autos, sales rose 0.2%, also better than the forecast of no change. Stripping out autos and gas, retail sales rose 0.6%. Now, with the CPI up 0.1% on a monthly basis in November, the retail sales number shows consumers more than keeping up with the pace of price increases. On a year-to-year, year-over-year basis, sales accelerated 4.1% compared with a headline CPI rate of 3.1%. The inflation rate is still more than 50% above the Fed's 2% target, but, of course, is well below its peak of 9% last summer. Economist Andrew Hunter at Capital Economics said the rebound in retail sales provides further illustration that the continued rapid growth in inflation is not coming at the cost of significantly weaker economic growth. Sales held up despite a 2.9% slide in receipts at gas stations as energy prices slumped during the month, Gas station sales were off 9.4% on an annualized basis. That weakness was offset by an increase of 1.6% at bars and restaurants, a 1.3 gain at sporting goods, hobby, book, and music stores, and a 1% increase at online retail sales, according to, again, the projections following yesterday's Fed policy meeting. Officials expect to cut about 75 basis points off short-term borrowing rates in 2024. And it being jobless claims Thursday, as it is every week, the number of Americans filing for jobless benefits fell last week as the labor market continues to thrive despite high interest rates and elevated costs. You'll hear in the background the consequence of hardwood floors and having a loyal dog sit at your feet playing with her toys during this program. So my apologies for any distractions. Anyway, applications for jobless benefits fell by 19,000 to 202,000 for the week ending December 9th. Another Labor Department report today said analysts were expecting about 224,000. Now, a total of 1.88 million people were collecting unemployment benefits during the week that ended December 2nd. That was up 20,000 more than the previous week. The job market and economic growth have remained surprisingly resilient this year, defying predictions that the economy would slip into a recession. But hiring has slowed from that breakneck pace of, well, since 2021, when the economy rebounded from the pandemic recession. Employers added a record 606,000 jobs a month in 2021 and almost 400,000 a month last year. That's slowed, however, to an average of 232,000 a month in 2023. And last month, it fell to under 200,000 at 199, with headline unemployment rate falling to 3.7%. Fresh signs that that some say that the economy is going to achieve this elusive soft landing. And of course, that's where inflation would return to the Fed's 2% target without causing a steep recession. Now, the headline jobless rate has remained at 4%, below 4% for almost 2 years now. It's the longest streak since the late 1960s. But notably, remember this, the government's more accurate U6 rate, which includes discouraged job workers and others, is sitting much higher at 7%. That job market was really never as good as they were saying. And healthcare spending growth in the U.S. may be settling back into pre-pandemic patterns. It's a new federal analysis of health expenditures in 2022. Medicare actuaries say that slower spending growth last year stemmed from the end of, well, the government's pandemic relief payments, which caused health spending to spike in 2020 when the pandemic started. Health spending in the U.S. grew 4.1% last year, reaching $4.5 trillion, according to the report. It was faster than the 2021's 3.2%, but more in line with the average 4.4% growth rate in the years leading up to the pandemic. Healthcare spending made up a little over 17% of our economy last year, down from a peak of closer to 20% in the pandemic's first year. But notably, out-of-pocket spending grew by 6.6% last year after jumping 11% in 2021, which at the time was the highest annual increase in four decades. And that takes a punch out of households' wallets. Michael Hartman, who's a statistician at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Office, the actuary, said trends are expected to be driven by more health-specific factors like medical-specific price inflation, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, I hear that music. It's very delightful seasonal music. Thank you, Mr. Todd. Take a short break. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I know my two grandsons are getting ready for Mr. Claus. They're excited. We are too, for that matter. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody working remotely the rest of this week doing some other client business. We're at 1-800-375-4188. And also check out our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And while you're there, sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs. Well, it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's offbeat topic is about keeping secrets. So, look, if you're familiar with that giddy feeling you get when you're about to reveal some good news or the joy of watching someone unwrap a present you know they're going to love, well, you might be doing something right. It turns out keeping something secret, as long as it's positive, energizes us. And that's according to a recent study in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. The science of secrets has so far largely focused on their negative effects. For example, studies show that holding on to secrets that are weighing us down, like lies or violations of trust, leads to stress, anxiety, and even depression. But good news kept to ourselves has the opposite effect. Excuse me. One reason that keeping positive secrets stimulates us might be that holding on to something before sharing it with others makes us savor it. Well, so says Michael Slepian, a Columbia University professor and lead author of this study. He says positive events tend to sort of blend together. One way to sort of break out of that and to leverage the positive experiences we all have is just to spend a little more time with them, thinking about them, reflecting on them, and enjoying them. Well, I know in my own case, over the course of my working career, keeping secrets was both a burden and a necessity. Not always positive. Given some of the positions I had, a lot of my coworkers told me all sorts of things in confidence, good, bad, and outrightly bizarre. Well, most of it was about their personal lives, but some of it was sheer office gossip. Some of it concerned a very personal stuff, about a fellow coworker that I felt I didn't need to know about. I've been told about a friend's secret child over the years, a marital affair, a series of hostile workplace comments that gave rise to illegal harassment. That latter scenario, by the way, led me to have to break a few subordinates' confidences. Now, I don't know about you, but I have to be very careful about what I tell most members of my, well, extended family. They just can't keep a secret, no matter how innocent or sensitive the subject is. So go ahead, throw more surprise parties, give more gifts, and try keeping your happy news to yourself for a little bit longer. Just so happens it's good for your spirit and builds trust among friends and perhaps even family. That is this week's Levity is Golden. Hey, back to more serious matters. Investors are rattling more companies over their executives' pay, tacking bonuses and other changes to remunerating their execs while shying away from supporting highly politicized environmental and social measures. Literally dozens of companies in the U.S., if not more, that proposed to change their pay plans struggled to win support from shareholders this year. That's according to research from Glass Lewis, who's a proxy advisor. These include 17 companies where pay proposals failed to receive a majority vote, more than doubling from 7 last year and the highest in at least 5 years. Companies that received less than 75% for bonus plans jumped to 159 this year from 112 in 2022. Holders' increased vigilance over executive pay comes as they cut back support for resolutions on environmental and social matters, too, in the face of criticism from politicians, even as those proposals have proliferated. The pay proposals that failed typically involved issuing new shares that dilute current investors. Ford this year, for example, asked shareholders for permission to issue more shares to pay their execs and employees, but BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, the car maker's largest shareholders, voted against the proposal. According to Institutional Shareholder Services, the proposed changes excessively diluted shareholders and contained what's called an evergreen provision that automatically issued more shares without fresh investor approval. Less, a Ford Family Trust controls 40% of the company's voting power, thus ensuring that the pay changes still pass this year. Investor support for environmental and social proposals has declined this year as particularly Republicans escalate a fight against sustainable investing. Both BlackRock and Vanguard supported far few climate, racial equity, and other politically motivated shareholder proposals than they did in the prior 2 years. But, I mean, investors' concerns about increasing pay suggest that their opposition to the company bonus plans changes are likely to continue. That's according to Maria Vu, who's a director of compensation research at Glass Lewis. I think that's a good thing, too. Is that my wife and I own shares up. I typically vote in the annual shareholder meeting proxies. I almost always vote against executive pay packages. Very few exceptions to that. Now, Vu added that changes to equity pay plans are typically binding, meaning that if they were to fail, companies need to propose them again. And that means these investor votes are actually one of the more powerful proposals that shareholders have. Hey, power to the shareholders. Well, the overall economy may not technically be in a recession or be in a recession yet, but most Americans believe it is. That's according to a recent survey conducted by Bankrate, which found 59% of Americans feel like the economy's in recession, which again is typically defined by two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Now, regardless of income, households say they're feeling the pressure at about the same rate. 60% of respondents in the lowest income houses, those making under $50,000 a year, said the economy feels like it's in a recession. Of those in higher income households making more than $100,000 a year, 61% agreed. And Xers, age 43 to 58, excuse me, were the age group most likely to say we're in a recession at 65%, followed by the millennials, age 27 to 42, at 60%. Baby boomers, aged 59, really and above, at 58%, and Gen Z, 18 to 26-year-olders, at 55%. Interestingly, households with children younger than 18 were the most likely to say the economy is in recession, at 66%. Adults with no kids, 54%. Earlier Bankrate survey gives weight to those feelings, with 50% of Americans saying their overall financial situation has declined since the last presidential election. The latest findings indicate nearly two-thirds of Americans, 66%, say the current economic environment has negatively impacted their finances this year, and 85% of those who agree the economy is in a recession share that same sentiment. More than three in five adults, 64%, told Bankrate they have changed their financial habits because of the economic environment. That jumps to 81% among those who believe the economy's in recession. Bankrate analyst Sarah Foster noted rather perceptively, quote, Americans seem to be evaluating the economy with different metrics than experts. Foster added, Americans judge the economy's strength by their own individual experiences living within it, and nationwide numbers often don't tell the same story as their finances. Not good news for the White House, although I'm sure they would have a good comeback for the lower sentiment. Anyway, despite tipflation and tipping fatigue, most Americans are planning to be as generous in holiday tipping this season as they were last year, if not more. Tipping, we know, has become a fraught issue as the pandemic and point-of-sale tip screens pushed up the amounts we pay service workers and the number of times we're asked to tip, which grows, which sends a lot of people into other states of mind, shall we say. 15% of U.S. adults will increase how much they tip this holiday season compared with last year. According to another Bankrate survey, 44% plan to tip the same. 13% say they're decreasing holiday tips. Notably, about a quarter, 23%, didn't tip last holiday season and don't plan to this year either. Great's Ted Rossman said, I think it's easier to complain about tip creep when you're being prompted by an app or a checkout kiosk during a quick counter service transaction. Here's where the rubber meets the road. He adds, most people seem more likely to tip generously when they have a relationship with a service provider who they encounter regularly. Interesting. This goes on to talk about other service industries, but I'm not sure we'll spend time with that. I think the important part of this story is that a majority of consumers now say they're fed up with so many tip requests. According to PopMenu, which is a restaurant tech company, consumers are asked to tip five times a week on average for different services. And of course, December has always been the most anxiety-producing time of the year for tipping, as everyone fears giving too much or too little. Well, on the one hand, you got the majority of households think we're in a recession. Well, more chief executives of America's largest companies plan to add workers more than just 3 months ago, seeing the economic outlook as a tad rosier than they did earlier this year. That's according to a new survey of 141 CEOs conducted by the Business Roundtable. Survey results are consistent with this steadily growing economy, one that looks likely, a lot of economists are now saying, to avoid that recession in the coming months. But we'll see. There's still plenty of signals that it could go the other way. This approach could keep the economy humming in the months ahead, even as the CEO's chill plans to invest in new equipment and software. The Roundtable's Economic Outlook Index rose 2 points to 74 this quarter. It peaked in the fourth quarter of 2021 and now has hovered at levels showing steady growth for six straight quarters. Importantly, the reading is comfortably above the level that suggests the economy is expanding. Roundtable CEO Josh Bolton said, the results of this quarter survey are consistent with an economy that's cooling and the Fed strategy to bring inflation back to target. Last quarter, more CEOs indicated plans to fire more workers, but that sentiment reversed. The Roundtable's hiring index jumped nearly 10% this time, a sign that more companies are planning to expand their workforce, or at least hold their headcount steady than those planning to cut staff. But CEOs aren't planning to add workers at the rate that helped define the pandemic-era job market boom, not by any stretch. For instance, the hiring subindex stands at 55. Same period in 2021, it was at 121. Now, while most CEOs indicate plans to hold capital spending steady, the growing share say they'll slash investments in things like new machinery, factories, or software in the coming months. About 20% said as much in fourth quarter compared to the 14% who said so last time. And if that continues, it could crimp the economy as demand slumps for the types of workers and companies build those kinds of items. Bottom line, overall growth hasn't come to a complete stop. Instead, it seems to be showing the type of moderation that Fed officials see as necessary to cool inflation and bring home a soft landing. Think about it. Why don't you drop me a line, daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. If I get any responses, I'll read them on next Tuesday's program. Or you can feel free to call in. We'll talk more about it at that time, too. Let's see, we only have about a minute left. I don't want to get into any new issues substantively. Let's just go over a couple of headlines here. I'm seeing Citigroup offering early bonuses as a way of compensating people they're asking to leave or laying off. Well, that's all the time we needed for that. We're heading into another break. Sit back, enjoy this Christmas music to take us out. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival. Oh,
the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas.
No, Bing, bring it on. Merry Christmas to you, too. One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Again, for all your precious metal needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. As precious metal investors know, gold prices have touched new highs in recent weeks. The price of gold plays a unique role in financial markets as both a hedge against inflation and as a store of wealth. And while gold has set new records on a few occasions since the onset of the pandemic, the recent push higher seems to be driven largely by Chinese demand amid deep uncertainty about their economy. The latest record price here was $2,135 an ounce on December 4th. Analysts at Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs note that the price is underpinned by robust demand from emerging markets. So they're telling clients to expect persistent strong demand from China and India in particular. Now, Reuters has reported that analysts expect Chinese demand for gold to remain high as economic growth grinds lower in coming years. and foreign investor outflows weigh on the yuan. Well, the property market is still looking for a bottom. It's in China. The surge of Chinese interest in gold is another sign, along with efforts to prop up its sagging currency, about the prospects for the world's second largest economy under the rule of President for Life Xi Jinping. But don't forget, too, gold is real money. It's also original money. Gold was money before the U.S. dollar and all other paper currencies. As Kelsey Williams reminds us, the dollar is a substitute for real money, i.e. gold. A rising gold price over time is a reflection of the loss of purchasing power in the dollar that's already occurred. When gold peaked at $2,058 in August 2020, its price was 100 times higher than its original fixed price of $20.67 when the dollar was freely convertible into gold at that rate. Consumer prices also increased by a similar amount over that time. Thus, the dollar of 90 years ago is worth one penny today. Translation, 99% loss of purchasing power. And that's the main reason you should be protecting your nest egg with plenty of gold. 1-800-375-4188. If we don't answer, leave a message. We'll call you back as soon as we can. Now, for many professionals, it's harder to find a job now than it was just at the start of the year. By most measures, as we've talked about, the labor market's looking good, but under the hood, there are signs of a slowdown, and white-collar workers in particular are feeling it. Again, the government's headline unemployment rate is still very low at 3.7%, and hiring appears to be chugging along at decent, if not robust, levels, at least according to the numbers released last week by the Labor Department. And although we're seeing headlines about layoffs at places like Hasbro and EY and Spotify, I mean, the data shows job cuts are historically low. But demand for workers, particularly in the professional classes, has cooled. Job openings have come down, and hiring rates have slowed considerably since peaking in October 2021. Here are some signs of cracks in that strong labor market. First, the hiring rate in the private sector is now below where it was in 2019. The job gains in the economy over the past several months have been confined to just a few industries. Two, three, four, in fact. If you strip out healthcare, education, leisure, and hospitality, there's been job loss in the private sector. Over the last 6 months, outside those three categories, the private sector registered a decline of roughly 7,000 in payroll employment. Hiring's been negative in the professional and business services category for the past few months. There were 9,000 jobs subtracted from that category in November, according to the BLS. Now, unemployment rates in certain professional sectors are still very low, but they've ticked up for some time. For instance, it went from 1.6% last year to 2.1% in November. Meanwhile, there's also been a big drop-off in temporary job hiring. Typically, before a company resorts to layoffs, it'll call temporary staff. That's often a leading indicator of a slowdown in the job market. Now, this could all be fine. Bunch of little cracks that don't bring the house down. In fact, it's pretty much what the Fed's been trying to do with its rate hikes, the sign the job market could be coming into better balance. But things could go sideways. One too-big-to-fail bank analyst says these are all signs that the job market could continue to weaken. In fact, he's predicting a recession early next year. Lightcast senior economist Ron Hetrick says what happens next, though, isn't obvious. Quote, it's highly critical and a fragile moment. Not a soft landing, it's the plane hovering in the air. And forget quiet quitting. Employers are doing quiet layoffs now amid a slowing job market for white-collar workers in particular. That means that workers get advance notice that they're being laid off, so they're working for additional weeks or even months for an employer who's told them the end is near. It's an under-the-radar way to do layoffs that can protect an employer from a run of bad press. Employers also hope that these gentler firings will engender more goodwill from departing workers. Meanwhile, affected employees can look for work while they still have a job, putting them in a stronger position to look. In some cases, management gives an end date that's actually months ahead. Say someone being told in April that his or her last day will be in December. Other employers tell workers that, yes, you're going to be laid off without a clear deadline. Stressful. I mean, every day you go in and it's like, could this be the day? Well, workers generally appreciate the ability to job hunt while they still have a job, especially since it's taking white-collar workers longer to find a new one these days. Employers are taking it slow when it comes to hiring, putting up more obstacles like more interviews and complicated tests in job applicants' paths. But some employers won't do stealth layoffs because they're wary of employees sharing, yes, confidential information with other companies. Spotify, though, last week said it was giving terminated employees there about 5 months' notice, longer than typical for most industries. Now, that's worthy of a positive trend. Well, it looks like the beginning of the end of the war on inflation is in sight. That doesn't necessarily mean the end of inflation itself is close. In fact, as Melody says all the time, with a fiat currency like our dollar, we'll always have some level of inflation. In fact, it's what the Fed does best. Barring some unpleasant economic surprises, Federal Reserve is now prepared to take its foot off the brakes and move to a stance in which it's no longer actively trying to slow growth. Majority of Fed policymakers are now envisioning rate cuts in 2024, while also looking at the economy remaining basically solid, again, with low unemployment and steady growth. The cycle of monetary tightening that's hammered markets and the economy for the last 2 years is, for all intents and purposes, close to being over, if we're to believe what we're reading and hearing. Fed's communications yesterday afternoon leave little doubt about where the sentiment among its policymaker lies. Median official, Fed official, anticipates cutting rates by, 3/4 of a percentage point in 2024 and another full point in 2025. But the median official also sees modest GDP growth next year, 1.4%. And the headline unemployment rate edging up to only about 4.1%. And that's still pretty low by historical standards. It's a vision, some might call it an illusion, made plausible by a remarkable downshift in inflation since officials last issued projections in September. The median Fed official now sees 2.8% inflation for all of 2023, down from 3.3% 3 months ago. I figure that's not for 2023, 2024. Now, put together, the Fed has bought into a narrative where improvements on the supply side of the economy are doing much of the work bringing inflation back to the Fed's 2% target. You know, fixing of supply chains, surging labor force participation, productivity gains, things like that. It's the opposite of the Fed meeting in November 2021, when the Fed pivoted toward a more hawkish stance when they recognized that inflation was not going to be transitory. It was 4 more months, though, before the Fed actually raised its interest rate target, but a shift in its communication started to filter through the markets right away, probably. So the markets wouldn't crash when they finally took some action. Fed Chair Jerome Powell's been reluctant to affirm markets' growing sense that rate cuts are on the way. That's at least in part because if financial markets get too hot and bothered. It could stimulate too much activity and undermine progress on inflation. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, Powell said it was too soon to speculate on rate cuts, but events appear to have overtaken him. Members of the Fed's policy committee penciled in rate cuts in their forecasts. The task is now to figure out the how and when of monetary easing. At this week's meeting, there was no back and forth, no attempt to sort of reach an agreement on rate cut plans, according to Powell. He said, I would say there's a general expectation that this will be a topic for us looking ahead. Well, no word yet on what the Fed's going to do with its balance sheet of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. As of last Wednesday, balance sheet was $7.7 trillion, down from its April 2022 high, just shy of $9 trillion. Excuse me. And last today, some of the big boys on Wall Street aren't taking new federal election regulations lying down. Three hedge fund associations, oh, pity them, have sued the Securities and Exchange Commission in a bid to vacate two new rules aimed at boosting transparency of short selling. In October, we told you about the SEC issuing the rules aimed at boosting transparency of short selling and security lending, two connected activities. The group say the SEC took conflicting stances with the rules, in one case allowing for transaction reports to be aggregated to protect investors' positions, while at the same time requiring other transaction reports to be disclosed individually. They also claim these new rules violate the Administrative Procedures Act, which requires agencies to justify their rules and consider feedback. Now, we know that short selling involves borrowing a stock to sell it when the expectation the price will fall. The investor then buys the stock back at the lower price, pocketing the difference. SEC's October short selling rule requires hedge funds to report short positions to the regulator, which publishes them with a delay on an aggregate basis where individual traders remain anonymous. That seems pretty harmless. The second rule requires financial firms to make daily reports on individual security loans, which facilitate their short positions. That data will also be disclosed on a delayed basis. Fund managers oppose these new rules around their trades, even though the parts involved aren't identified, and those that are on a delayed basis. But they argue in court the rules could end up revealing confidential investment strategies and potentially facilitate retaliation or other manipulative activities, as if they're not manipulating markets themselves en masse. Well, other petitioners are the Alternative Investment Management Association and the National Association of Private Fund Managers. When adopting the rules, SEC Chair Gary Gensler said, it was important for the SEC and the public to know more about the short sale activity in the equity markets, especially in times of stress or volatility. I agree. End of discussion for now. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday with Melody. She'll be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.